Welcome to Dispatch in Depth. Today's topic isn't strictly dispatch related, but we didn't think that should stop you from being able to hear it. Today's guest serves as a member on the Board of Trustees for the International Academies of Emergency Dispatch and as an advisory member for our new Diversity and Inclusion Committee to help strengthen our organization through additional inclusion. He participated in the civil rights movement in the 60s and participated in the march from Selma, Alabama to Montgomery, Alabama, promoting voting rights for African Americans. He met Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and received his spiritual calling into the ministry after serving in the U.S. Air Force and obtaining his BA degree in rhetoric from the University of California at Berkeley, his BS degree in religion from Westminster College, a Master of Ministry degree from Northwest Nazarene University, and MA degree in Mass Communications from the University of Utah. He was formerly the pastor and chief administrator for Calvary Baptist Church and has since retired. Welcome, Reverend Davis.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Good to be here.
I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you.
So why don't you just go ahead and talk about some of your experiences as a civil rights activist?
Well, I started my civil rights activist activity during the 1960s. I was a student at Tuskegee, which is a small college in Alabama started by Booker T. Washington and popularized by George Washington Carver. But it was also near the hotbed of much of the civil rights movement that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was leading. So as on one occasion, he was leading a march from Selma to Montgomery. He and John Lewis, by the way, and others were leading this march to ensure that every citizen of color had an opportunity to register so that they could then be prepared to vote. And as a result of that, we, the students at Tuskegee, joined the march and helped to bring about that change and eventually got a law passed called the Voting Rights Act.
That's incredible. What kind of other activism have you done in the past, 40, 50 years?
Well, I've done other activist activity. I was at Berkeley doing what's called the hot years that they were bringing about change. They were changing the representation so that it represented the people more than it did just the powers that be. Then I came to Utah and had to deal with fair housing issues, had to deal with the Martin Luther King holiday bill, the MX missile, just a number of issues here, including the religious issue of the dominant religious group believing that African Americans were cursed in the beginning. That changed in 1978. And officially is no longer the case.
So would you say that your involvement in the Fair Housing Act and the Martin Luther King Jr. Day Act and just humanizing African Americans and people of color, do you feel that it was more big movements or a lot of very small, like grassroots movements, and just talking from person to person in your sphere of influence?
After Dr. King was assassinated, most of the major leaders of our country were gone. And from that point until today, we need individuals doing individual things where they are. And that's the kind of thing that we did here. We were Utah, and Utah needed to make some changes, and we made those small changes for the state of Utah, which then would spread across the whole country. So that's really the new, and I believe the future of bringing about positive changes. We have to do it where we are.
I love that. I love the idea of doing it where you are, because I think a lot of people, I thought definitely that you have to, move to a big city and you have to do all of these big things to make a difference.
Absolutely not. In fact, the George Floyd death recently demonstrated that it's not just in the big cities, nor is it just in the South, or is it just on the East Coast. It's everywhere that we've got to bring about change. And those of us who live in those places have a role to play in order to effectuate that change.
Exactly. And you were talking to the company just a little bit ago, and you mentioned problems with racism in Utah. And Utah is not known for having a high population of people of color, right? And so what would you say to people who are in largely white communities? What are things that they can do that will make the overall situation better for everyone?
Well, I think that there are two things that have to be done. One has to be done by the small groups, African Americans, Native Americans, Hispanics, and so forth. The other has to be done by the majority. And that is, first of all, the small groups have to be the best that they can be. They have to get for themselves as much formal education as they can get. They have to be prepared so that when the opportunity comes, they are ready to step in and take advantage of that. Secondly, the majority has to use what power, what privilege they have to empower those who have no privilege and have no power or who have little. And that's, I think, where we have to walk together. The powerless and the powerful locking arms and walking together to bring about change.
Yeah, so part of empowering, I imagine, would be diversity and inclusion, especially in hiring practices. And one of the things you said was the importance of hiring different kinds of people, but not just one, right? Not hiring just one Black dispatcher for your center.
Yeah, you hire one person and that person is all by themselves. They don't have any support system. They don't have anybody else who can help them. In fact, the Bible puts it rather interestingly. It says that two people together can warm each other. And the same is true if we just hire one person. That person is out there by themselves. They are expected to be everything to everybody, and we miss the mark with that. But if we hire more than one, two, three, several, then I think we can get the job done.
Right. And I like what you said about they don't have to be everything to everybody, because if you are in an all-white space, mostly you become the person that is the face of your people, right? And that's
absolutely
huge. That's a huge burden for someone.
That's a huge burden. And people tend to think that everybody who is of a particular hue knows everybody else who's of that same hue. And that's just not the truth. The truth is that we all individuals and we all have something to contribute, but what we have to contribute is not just being the all things to everybody.
Right. They get to be their own person in a situation where they have that support.
Indeed. Indeed.
For my last question, what is one thing that you would tell the 911 dispatch community to take away from this discussion?
Well, I would say to the 911 dispatch community that your protocols have to be protocols that can communicate across all kinds of lines. That if you want to speak to people who speak Spanish, then you got to have protocols that Spanish-speaking people can understand. You can't just do it for the majority, but you have to figure out a way to do it for all. And that's one of the things that I'd like about this organization, is that it has taken the time in the past to go out in the community and say, does this language work, this particular protocol, is it understandable for the people in your community?
Reverend Davis is talking about a project that the International Academies of Emergency Dispatch did, where we went out to survey six groups of people who are not in the majority in Utah. So it was Reverend Davis's church, Calvary Baptist,
right,
and other groups to talk about their concerns, what their attitudes toward 911 were, what their perceptions were. And we will have a podcast coming up to talk about that. And we will also have an outreach toolkit so that you can do this kind of outreach in your community.
In fact, that particular project included Hispanics, Polynesians, Native Americans, Africans, African Americans, and healthcare workers. And with all six of those groups working together, we were able to identify areas that needed to be massaged and changed, and then make the change, and 911 was willing to do that.
Yeah, and that's something that's important to do and important to know, that sometimes you have to start with something and then massage it till it becomes accessible for everyone.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the powers that be have to be willing to let that happen and to make those kind of changes.
Right, they have to have that flexibility and that understanding,
right.
But you don't have any of that without the communication between the different groups.
Absolutely.
And the integration.
Absolutely. It requires effective communications. It also requires taking advantage of the people who are available to you where you are, living where you live.
Thank you so much, Reverend Davis. We are so happy to have you today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Dispatch in Depth. Remember, it really helps if you rate and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcasts. Dispatch in Depth is hosted by me, Becca Barris. I'm also the technical director and producer, and Matthew Maiko is the executive producer.